Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. Well, I never fail to say how quickly time flies. This week I'm back to my, what I call my normal format, which is Sheldon Neidl's message, and then on to the general news, a few interesting UFO items, and possibly, if there is time, one or two channeled messages. I would say, just looking ahead for your information, that I'm on a break. I'm having a short vacation next week, so I will not be on in person next Friday, but they may rerun one of the programs that's in the archives. I don't know quite what's happening there. But after I get back, for two consecutive weeks, I will be having people on the show for interview. And I can see the way it's developing. That will gradually, I think, take up more of my time. So I think that's good news. I really enjoy it. So, without further ado, I will start with Sheldon Neidl's message on behalf of the Spiritual Hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. And it reads, "We return to sit beside you again. The great changes that you have longed for are moving forward at a divine and accelerated pace. Many things have been done by the dark in the far past few days to try to slow the pace of our success. They have failed. The work of our Earth allies continues to move in a most positive direction. The new banking system is ready, as is the new currency distribution system. Deliveries are approaching a time for dispersal, and the sums promise to be even greater and believed a few weeks ago. All this is very heartening to us. The resignations of the present US regime and a number of its allies are on the horizon. Our first contact personnel watch these developments very closely. The importance of these things makes it imperative that all continues to go well. To see this through, we appointed a number of special liaisons to guide these events to a successful conclusion. Further, we assign many well-qualified negotiators to assist our other liaison and diplomatic teams. This progress is only one of the signs that a divine moment in your history is finally being reached. As you have seen, Mother Earth is quickening the pace of her own transition to full consciousness. Climatic changes and an increase in the intensity of sea quakes and other seismic events are portents of even bigger episodes. This is another sign that the social changes expected by the divine need to happen now, as your global society can no longer go on as before. We have watched as your leaders continue to ignore what has been set before them. Fortunately, worldwide coalitions of groups and individuals of great wealth and power have come together to carry out the divine decrees of heaven. Our part in this currently is to encourage, mentor, and suggest ways to carry out this truly enormous amount of change. We fully comprehend that what they are doing can only impact your world and the approach of first contact in the most positive way. Around this are the many announcements that are to lead to our arrival on your magnificent shores. The present times are thus most encouraging. In the meantime, the US regime continues to insist on maintaining its failed policies right up to the moment of its demise. The transitional regime, slated to replace this illegal government, knows the immensity of its task. The many things they are to announce are only the beginning. A great deal of this government is either corrupt or beholden to a whole slew of special interest. These individuals need to be weeded out swiftly and replaced by officials sworn to defend the common welfare and ensure domestic freedom and tranquility. This task is to be concurrent with the various programs for creating mass abundance and for instituting the new banking and currency system. Also, an enormous retraining program designed to move the American judicial system from the present statutory mode back to common and constitutional law is to be carried out in the first 90 to 120 days in office. This great duty sits at the heart of everything. Not only is there a need to redress a whole mountain of past grievances, it is also necessary to make sure that the various new technologies are smoothly and successfully introduced. This means that the present world economy must be entirely reordered. The abundance programs, global debt annulment, and the new financial and monetary system are a good start. However, the end of the monopolistic age of oil means that a new way of doing business is most definitely required. Our Earth allies have addressed this issue by coming up with a business model more fitted to the new reality. The traditional global corporation and its allied system of partnerships are to end and will be replaced by socially and ecologically responsible unions. These organisations will operate under a set of rules that encourages a coming together of groups representing the common interest and focusing on essential tasks. These organisations are to be modified as needed by your global society. The world that is swiftly to take shape will be very different from the one you are used to. The success of this new realm requires a steady flow of information into the public domain from those whose task it is to bring this new reality into being. Knowing this, our Earth allies have allocated a lot of television, internet, and radio time to this purpose. A huge quantity of information to be spread worldwide means a huge amount of relevant media programming. Until now, you have lived in a world filled with many kinds of lack, and deliberate obstacles separate the wealthy and the education oligarchies from the masses. This separation is perpetuated by certain unofficial rules about how society and big business are run. These rules are now to cease and be replaced by conventional wisdoms founded on freedom, individual sovereignty, and universal equality. This is to include ways to properly acknowledge an individual's contributions to society. This alone can greatly ease the daily tensions of the present system. In this new era of peace and prosperity, exciting new technologies can see the light of day, and the long age of suppression can be ended. These technologies will prepare your society for what we have to offer. In many ways, technology is a herald of the next phase of a society's growth in consciousness, and reflects the area where there is to be rapid inner expansion of awareness and motivation. Thus, the rise of the electronic age was a precursor to the vast rise in consciousness of the past two decades. The booming communications technology mirrored humanity's desire to discover and spread information, including spiritual truths, all around the world. Previously forbidden and hidden knowledge is now unveiled, discussed, and integrated into your world view. As an example, your growth in awareness of many things leads also to much greater public acceptance of our benevolent presence. Consciousness is a universal web of divine wisdom. In its fullest form, it becomes one with the Creator. At this point, the interconnectedness of all life is fully apparent, and you perceive life, whether spiritual or physical, fully as one. You revel in the fact that this grand consciousness has such multiplicity of form, and you love all aspects of it because you are consciousness, and consciousness is you. This one great divine soul has many houses and many ways to live in each of them. The separation you currently experience is an illusion foisted upon you by your state of limited consciousness. You now realize this and are searching intensely for a way to return to wholeness. This brings us to the present and its potential for positive change in all areas. It is also the time when the creators of the old ways fall out of grace. Life and her creator love are forever bathed in the eternal light of creation. Divine light is the ultimate energy, and this prime mover is what we use to produce technology. In effect, we are using ourselves to forge our reality and carry out our particular life mission. In this, we are supported by all. Your world is readying herself to make a shift to the one we described to you, one filled with exciting revelations and a degree of collective awareness that provides a supportiveness you cannot imagine. Here, the pursuit of light, love and wisdom extend your learning about the secrets of creation, and you are enveloped in support on all levels for what you are doing to fulfill your life's mission as you help to unfold creation. The message ends. Today we talked about what is happening and about its implications both for ourselves and for you. You are very close to some truly astounding developments, all of which lead to first contact and your return to full consciousness. And so ends Dolan's message for this week. As tends to be the feature in the recent weeks and months, they're very informative and I think also very encouraging. And the general consensus, I think, through all the messages, including my own, is that first contact is becoming very near, and the evidence of what is happening, I think, to Bush and his administration with the resignations and other events seems to signal that perhaps even they themselves are aware that their time is nearly up. So hopefully we haven't too long to go before we see the main event, which is going to turn everything around, and that is the resignation and removal of the Bush administration. I'm over now to my general news items. For some reason, there aren't very many this particular week. The effects of Hurricane Katrina will roll on, and there was an email that passed my way which was saying that the Bush administration knew the levees had the potential to fail and did nothing. They did nothing during the catastrophe, and they've done nothing since to make good on their promises to help the people there rebuild. That's just, for some reason, a short snippet that came around. Can't actually even see the source, but I think that information is generally known. And I recall that last week there was indeed yet another article about the levees. On a separate email that came round, there was some investigation carried out by an institute that looked into where the tax dollars had gone. And this was related to the Katrina funds, and the institute found that out of $116 billion, allocated at less than 30% has gone towards long-term rebuilding, and less than half of that has been spent, much less reached those most in need. Now, I'm getting a little bit hoarse, I can hear it, so let me just take a sip of water. See if that'll clear my tubes, as they say. Yes, again, that item I mentioned, they also came up last week, but yet another one, which shed some more light on the whole affair, came from the group that carried out the inquiry called southernstudies.org. I can't recall reading out of their report, but it came out and was edited by Jeffrey Buchanan and Chris Crom, members of the Institute, and they called it Blueprint, yes, for Gulf Renewal, Tracking the Post-Katrina Recovery. And they found that most of the money coming from Washington hadn't got to those most in need. And they went on to say that when pressed on the slow pace of recovery in the Gulf Coast, President Bush insisted that the federal government had fulfilled its promise to rebuild the region. And the proof, he said, is in the big check the federal government signed to underwrite the recovery, which we mentioned was allegedly more than $116 billion. But the residents of the still devastated Gulf Coast are left wondering whether the check bounced. For starters, most federal money, about two-thirds, was quickly spent for short-term needs like debris removal and Coast Guard rescue. And Levinsky explained there is a significant difference between responding to an emergency and rebuilding post-disaster. And his report said that this has left little money for long-term Gulf Coast recovery projects. And although it's tricky to unravel the maze of federal reports, their best estimate of agency data is that only $35 billion had been appropriated for long-term rebuilding. And even worse, less than 42% of the money set aside has even been spent, much less gotten to those most in need. For example, Washington set aside $16.7 billion for community development block grants, one of the two biggest sources of rebuilding funds, especially for housing. But as of March 2007, only $1 billion, just 6%, had been spent, almost all of it in Mississippi. It said that following bad publicity, HUD spent another $3.8 billion on the program between March and July, leaving 70% of the funds still unused. That's all I'm going to read from that report, but that obviously is another matter that's going to roll on and on, I feel. And we wonder why the response to the damage in New Orleans and those areas from Hurricane Katrina has been so slow. I mean, is there in fact some deliberate reason not to go ahead with the rebuilding? I don't know. It's the most weird thing. Now, I'll move on to something that's caused a little bit of stir this week around the email channels. There was a report that came out on the 26th of August, which was headed, McKinney, Sheehan, Tarpley, warn of new Cheney 9/11, and it was referred to as the Cannon Bunkport warning. Now, I'm going to tell you now, in case you're unaware of it, that shortly after this report came out, there was yet another email issued saying that this was a hoax. So you're left in a situation, I think, really, where you don't know which one of the two is the hoax. I'll just tell you briefly what this one said, and you can sort of, as they say, take it with a pinch of salt. It was addressed to the American people and the peace-loving individuals everywhere. And it said, I quote, "Massive evidence has come to our attention which shows that the backers, controllers and allies of Vice President Dick Cheney are determined to orchestrate and manufacture a new 9/11 terror incident and or a new Gulf of Tonkin war provocation over the coming weeks and months. Such events would be used by the Bush administration as a pretext for launching an aggressive war against Iran, quite possibly with nuclear weapons, and for imposing a regime of martial law here in the United States. We call on the House of Representatives to proceed immediately to the impeachment of Cheney as an urgent measure for avoiding a wider and more catastrophic war. Once impeachment has begun, it will be easier for loyal and patriotic military officers to refuse illegal orders coming from the Cheney faction. We solemnly warn the people of the world that any terrorist attack with weapons of mass destruction taking place inside the United States or elsewhere in the immediate future must be considered the primary facial responsibility of the Cheney faction. We urge responsible political leaders everywhere begin at once to inoculate the public opinion of their countries against such a threatened false flag terror operation." And it was allegedly signed by the people mentioned, including some political leaders that were supposed to have gathered in protest at the Bush compound in Kennebunkport, Maine, on August the 24th to the 25th. So that's the most odd one. I don't know whether something more will follow that up. I guess if that original report was genuine, people who issued that, you would expect, would be quick to confirm that it is genuine. We'd have to wait and see on that one. My final item, is it? No, two more. One of the final items is one that came off the website, vote2impeach.org. It's only a short extract that I'm reading here, and they're referring to the fact that Gonzalez resigned, joining Rove in heading, as they call it, for the exit. And they say at the very moment that people from around the country are preparing to descend on Washington, D.C., for a massive march for peace and impeachment, Alberto Gonzalez announced today that he is joining Karl Rove in the mad dash to flee Bush's sinking ship. Gonzalez, like Rove, is under scrutiny for lying to Congress under direction from Bush and Cheney. Gonzalez will be remembered in history as the infamous guardian and legal justifier for a regime of torture, massive secret spying of the American people, and the suspension of due process and other cherished rights. The crumbling of Bush's inner circle is a sure sign that those who participated in the criminal acts of the administration are seeking to avoid the hard glare of a country that has turned itself against the Iraq war and the administration also. Well, that's all I wanted to read from that. The calls for Bush and company to be impeached carry on and on and on. Not sure at this stage whether what is referred to by Sheldon Neidel's messages as the legal removal of Bush and his group, but whether that is in fact connected with impeachment or whether we may yet see another event come up that will be, as you might say, the final straw that will enable people to go ahead and take that sort of action. The final item I have on the news relates to the last item I read out, that is the resignation of Alberto Gonzalez. I don't think I mentioned this last week, but it quotes the part of the speech that Bush made at a press conference in Crawford, Texas, when he praised Gonzalez for his integrity, decency and principle. And he mentioned that his good name was dragged through the mud for political reasons. I had to find myself chuckling a bit at that one because I wanted to say to Bush that the mud has been created by the very people who are talking about it. Be that as it may. Right. I'm moving on now to my UFO section. I've got one or two items here. A very interesting contact that comes out of my favourite flying saucer reviews going back to the 60s. And I mentioned this last week. This is about the one-eyed entities. Now, I have heard about these, I think, on one other occasion. And to my recollection, this particular one, I think, is a different one. So, it refers to a sighting and a contact going back to the 28th of August, 1963. It happened in Belo Horizonte, which apparently is the capital of a Brazilian state. And it happened to someone who said that the contact only lasted 15 minutes, but for all of that, it's a very interesting one. A person called Fernando and his companions declared that on that night, in August 1963, immediately after their supper, which was apparently at about 7 to 7:30 p.m., they went out into the garden for the specific purpose of washing a coffee percolator with water from a container standing outside the well. And reaching the garden via the back door, Fernando noted that the garden was brightly illuminated but this did not surprise him as there was a room. One of his friends went quickly to the container and lowered his head and arms right down in order to scoop up the water with the bowl. And yet another friend, who was immediately behind him and more to the right-hand side of the house, was the first one to notice with surprise the source of the light that was illuminating the garden was a spherical object, which was illuminated within and having transparent walls, was floating yet stationary at about 5 meters, that's about 15 feet above the ground, and about 25 feet from the boys, over a pear tree that stood in the front of the house and slightly to one side of it. Now, I've got the advantage of looking at the drawings that were made, and the sketch that was made by one of the companions of Fernando, who was only age 7 at the time, shows a perfectly spherical object with 3 entities sitting inside, gives the appearance that they're sitting one after another, wearing their astronaut's outfit, their uniform, if you might call it, plus headgear. Their head and etc. is enclosed in something, I suppose, that you might say looks like a fishbowl. On the top of it, there are 2 antennas that stick out. So, just reading on then a little bit further, they saw this object and they said that it was comfortable with the principal room of one of the rooms in their house, which would mean it was about 9 to 10 foot wide. And the outside, in appearance, was divided into small squares. They said on the upper part of it, it had a sort of aerial consisting of 2 rods set at inclined angles, forming a V with tiny balls on their tip and a central vertical rod. Through the walls of the sphere, 4 persons could be seen. There you are in the drawing, it showed 3, but apparently there was a 4th. Seated on little stools with only 1 leg. One of the persons occupying the rear seat had a masculine appearance and was more strongly built than the others. Immediately in front of that one, in the middle of the sphere, was what seemed to be a woman with a long blonde hair pulled back. On the front seat was a man similar to the first mentioned man, but thinner, who seemed to be controlling instruments on a panel on which there was a sort of screen, like the screen of a TV set. The 4th man, who came out of the sphere immediately afterwards, was sitting on the left-hand side of the girl in the centre of the object. All were wearing a sort of diver suit and had their heads in round, transparent domes or helmets. They presented a virtually uniform appearance, including their clothing. The trunks of their bodies were clad in something chestnut-coloured. Below the waist, the clothing was white, down as far as the knees. From where it was black, as far as the legs, one of the boys said they were wearing black boots, and the uniform seemed to be made of leather and were very wrinkled in the parts corresponding to the limbs and the chest of the crew. In a matter of seconds, 2 parallel shafts of yellow light were projected towards the ground from the under part of the machine, and between these 2 shafts, one of the men descended, as though floating upright, till he gently touched the ground. As soon as he was on the ground, the man walked towards the witnesses, and Fernando and his friends found themselves almost hemmed in against the house, and totally dumbfounded, but not warn their other companion, who was still had his head right down inside the water drum that we mentioned earlier. With a measured, regular step, his arms swinging slightly away from the body and apparently not perceiving the presence, Fernando and his friend, the spaceman went towards the well where he halted. Then he stretched out an arm towards the one with his head in the well, and interpreting this gesture as a threat to the unsuspected companion, Fernando jumped out onto his friend, throwing him violently to the ground so as to prevent the man from seizing hold of him. With one of them still lying astonished on the ground, the man, not moving, looked at Fernando and then the other companion. latter had retreated farther towards the rear end of the garden, intending to escape into the house. But in his confused flight, he struck a knee on the corner of the house and had a pain, and it made him stop. At that moment, the man looked at him. Ronald then turned back a few paces and took up a passive position beside the house with his other companions, who also felt themselves powerless either to flee or to shout. The man made a series of gestures with his hands horizontally, accompanied by head movements and strange words. Fernando says that after this gesticulation, his fear left him. Calmer now, and at a distance of about 6 feet from him, the boys were able to take a better look at their strange visitor. He had only one eye. He was totally bald, as were two of his companions, and his skin had a strong reddish tinge. His enormous figure was compared by the boys to the size of the side door of their house, which is over 6 foot wide. On the man's transparent helmet, there was a sort of hoop-shaped antenna with a small ball hanging from it. The man's eye was very large, round and dark, and did not have the white part, which we call the sclerota. One of Fernando's companions is emphatic that the central part of the eye, instead of having a round pupil, had merely a horizontal, darker streak. Above the eye moving frequently, there was a dark projecting area which the boys took to be an eyebrow. Clothing, as already described, covered the man's entire body and seemed to be slightly inflated. The man sat down on the edge of the well with his profile to the boys and facing the machine, where his companions were still to be seen. The height to which the man's head came was much higher than the height of the winch of the well. Taking advantage of the man's apparent distraction at this moment, Fernando moved a few paces and so got behind the man. Quickly, he picked up a piece of brick from the ground and raised his arm to throw it at the man's back. "I wanted to hit him," says Fernando. Inexplicably, as though he had guessed what was coming, the man jumped to his feet and wheeled round towards Fernando with a rapid movement, ejecting from a rectangular hanging area at the level of his chest a beam of yellow light, which struck the boy's hand, making it tremble for a moment. The brick dropped to the ground and the boys perceived that the man, looking rapidly in the direction of the machine, received from his companion seated at the controls a gesture, which they interpreted as one of dissuasion. At that moment, the boys perceived more clearly that this other member of the crew also had one eye. In a brief instance that the man had had his back towards them, the boys were able to note the existence there, on his back, of a coppery-coloured box fixed to his clothing. "You know that colour that appears when you strip the casing from a piece of electric light wire," said Fernando, trying to describe this box. In a strange language and an extremely loud voice, and with many gestures with hands and head and eye, the man now seemed to be trying to make himself understood by the children, who stood there passively watching. Forming a circle with his thumb and index finger, the man traced various circles in the air around this first circle, with the index finger of his other hand walking the whole time. Then he pointed to the three boys and, with a certain degree of difficulty, tried to place the palms of his hands against his own head, as though making the gesture of sleeping. Then he pointed to the moon, making the gesture of progressive elevation with his hands, as though to indicate flying in that direction. Then he turned about slowly and strode slowly towards the machine along the same path for which he had come. Seeing him leaving, one of Fernando's companions said anxiously to Fernando, "Will he come back?" To their astonishment, the man turned his head towards them and made various vertical movements with it, as though replying to the question. Halfway to the machine, he bent down towards the flower bed and took a plant from it with his left hand. On reaching the spot where he had landed, he made a slight gesture and the two beams of light reappeared, linking the machine with the ground, flying up smoothly between the two beams and maintaining an erect posture as he had when descending. He entered the craft and they saw him take his seat again with his companions. After that, the machine at once emitted a powerful brightness and rose obliquely and silently towards the east. Then its light went out, and it vanished from the sight of the children, who were still standing there, astounded. I won't read the rest of it. It just follows on where the children ran into the house and told their parents, etc., etc. There we are. It's a very well-documented sighting and contact. Although I've never heard, not to my knowledge anyway, or if I did, I can't remember it, where beings of that nature have come from. In other words, whether it's from within our own galaxy. Interesting report, that one. They seem to come up sort of once in a lifetime, and they disappear. But anyway, while I've got the flying saucer reviews, they will reappear. I have a short message here that came from someone who circulates interesting bits of information, and it was part of a message received from a being from Andromeda. I think the being's name is Sansara. He or she was evidently a nurse in a fleet which had a medical team. And this was this short message to the inhabitants of Mother Earth. I wish to send a message to all who read this. The message is filled with love and light from all of us within the Galactic Federation of Light. The message is simple, relax. A lot of people seem to doubt whether the events you have been waiting for will ever happen. For that, I shall answer with a quote. What is divinely right to happen shall occur when the divine energy of love and light engulf the coming manifestation. Do you feel that has happened? You all need not to worry. This is the final stretch. I would ask that everyone stay calm yet focused on what is about to occur. Whether you struggle with health, finances or anything else, you all need to know that now is the time to put that in the back of your minds. The solution to all of those things will be handed to every one of you. Once the prosperity funds are distributed, worldwide prosperity will become a reality in the blink of an eye. All the wonders speak of Earth, please relax. Don't strain yourself to survive. Know that the time for the golden age has arrived and the hard part is nearing a close. From this day on, the future shall shine onto you with a great, wondrous light that will joyfully bring you to the state heavenly decreed by the spiritual hierarchy. All consciousness. We cannot wait for the coming ceremony of first contact. You all have succeeded. You need to know that. I shall take my leave now. Soon there won't be any need for updates as we will be on your shores, embracing your love. And in Andromedan, they say, was there goodbye, Econ 2. At least I don't believe that's what it's supposed to be. There we are, another interesting short message there. I have an extract here from an interview with Bob Dean. Anybody who's interested in UFOs probably know that Bob Dean was a major. And he, I think to best of my knowledge, certainly worked for a period of time in Europe, and he had access to information about UFOs and the likes. Now, this is a very short extract, but some very interesting information from that interview he had on March 24th, 1996, and it was documented by Bob Hieronymus. And Major Dean said, quote, there was a human group that looked so much like us that really drove the admirals and the generals crazy, because they determined that these people, and they had seen them repeatedly, they had contact with them, these people looked so much like us they could sit next to you on a plane or in a restaurant and you'd never know the difference. And being military and being primarily paranoid, that bothered the generals and the admirals a little bit. The fact that these intelligent entities would be involved with us walking up and down the dark corridors of SHAPE, that is the supreme headquarters of Allied Powers of Europe, or walking down the corridors of the Pentagon. My God, it even dawned on a couple of them that these guys could even be in the White House. Of course, as I said, being paranoid in those years, it really shook things up a little bit. The report goes on to say that Dean's testimony is a vital key in unlocking the truth of extraterrestrials living among the human population. Bob Dean's testimony conclusively demonstrates that official military and government agencies are aware of this possibility, and in fact would undoubtedly have been developing strategies for such a contingency. Now, this extract from the report came to surface through Dr. Michael Sella, who is a well-known name. Now, the report goes on to say that while NATO viewed extraterrestrials living among us in the context of a classified study, assessing UFOs as a potential security threat based on contactee testimonies, it appears that the extraterrestrial visitors are blending in to learn about the human population. At least that was the opinion of Dr. Salah. Dean also reported that government insiders feel that we're dealing with hundreds of ET civilizations, some intergalactic, some interdimensional. He noted that over 10 years ago, NASA set up a scientific committee which came to the conclusion that there are an estimated 10 billion planets with intelligent life. Sergeant Major Dean has assembled 20 astronauts, former intelligence officers, servicemen who participated in crashed UFO retrieval operations, generals, admirals, and even cosmonauts, who are willing to testify to a congressional committee about what they know about UFOs, providing they are released from their national security oaths. And apparently what they know has been videotaped, and it's been taken to a Washington, D.C. law firm and stored in its safe, awaiting public hearings. That part according to a document of Dr. Richard J. Boylan in UFO Reality is Breaking Through. Former U.S. military commander Dean had been working with CSAT's Dr. Stephen Greer in concert with a former astronaut, Gordon Cooper, other astronauts, another high-ranking military officer, and a general to plan the release of UFO information to which they are privy. Dr. Greer and Sergeant Major Dean are part of a coalition of Starlight and Stargate projects which have been putting together the best evidence of UFO and ET reality. And the evidence includes not only military and intelligence officers who participated in UFO crash retrievals and autopsies on ET corpses, but also fighter pilots, generals, astronauts and cosmonauts who have witnessed UFOs close up, as well as UFO and ET tissue samples. So that is according to further documentation by Dr. Boylan. So that's where that bit ends, and I'll make that the end of my UFO articles, because what I'd like to read you in the time we had left, which is somewhere around about 7 or 8 minutes, is a bulletin that came out from an entity, a spiritual entity called Kirael. There is a website which you can find if you search under that name, which is spelled K-I-R-A-E-L. On August the 12th this year, a bulletin was issued which reads as follows. All right, now we have asked to speak with you today because of some changes on the immediate horizon. You're nearing the crossover point between 3D and 4D, and for those in the first two waves, this will result in a substantial shift in one's perceptions and subjective experience. What will this look like when it arrives? We can only give you an analogy to something you can imagine, because otherwise you could not imagine it at all until after you had already experienced it. Imagine it is daytime and you are inside a house looking through a window to the outside. Even though the sun is shining, the window looks like it's coated on the outside with a thick, translucent gel. So the images you see through the window are blurred, but still recognizable by their overall shape and color. This is how you perceive 4D right now. Now imagine yourself moving toward the window and then passing through it bodily. While you are still inside of the house, the window and the gel will still blur the images outside, but as you draw closer to the window, they will become somewhat sharper and clearer. However, it is not until you have passed through the window itself and are fully present outside of the house that you will see clearly. The window and the gel represent what you refer to as the vow. You are approaching a time when you will, figuratively speaking, pass through the vow that clouds your perceptions and begin to see clearly again. We say again because this is how you were before you incarnated as a veiled human being, and you will now return to that prior state. And once you have fully crossed over into 4D awareness, your memories will also be restored. You will be able to see in all directions at the same time. You will be able to hear the thoughts of others, and you will begin to assess the full range of your abilities, all while maintaining a physical presence within the third dimension. At some point, when you have adapted to this change in your abilities, you will literally be able to walk through walls. However, we must emphasize that this is still a process, not an event, and there is a continuum of experiences that will accompany the shift. The first stages of this will involve a gradual shift in your ability to see, just as things began to appear more clear as you move toward the window in an example. However, what you see will not just be visual perception. You will see with your entire beings, and it will be more like total knowing, involving your intuition as the container of the experience and your subtle senses, divining the colours, shapes, sounds and smells that are part of that experience. Most importantly, you will understand what you perceive or what is. The blinders will come off and you will just know everything you need to know in that moment, and eventually, as you acclimate to this experience, you will know everything that is connected in that moment. You will be able to perceive all of the relationships, past, present and future, that intersect in the moment and be able to trace them in any direction you choose. Your sense of self will dissolve as you move into this shift, until you become without boundary, able to merge with and become anything you perceive. You will know yourself to be everything you perceive. And when this process is complete, you will be in union with all that is, and all experience of separation will fall away. We want to remind you that this is a process, not an event. But it will proceed gradually enough for you to integrate it as it proceeds. However, we felt that you should know what is coming, so you will understand and recognize it, what it is when your perceptions begin to change. This will not occur at the same rate or the same time for everyone, as each has their own unique process to go through. However, everyone who is part of the first two waves will go through this, and everyone who is not part of the first two waves will not go through it until after the evacuation. This will be a profound shift of identity and perception, and it will occur in small increments so that you can maintain function and adapt. You will not be able to explain this to anyone who is not part of the first two waves, so we suggest you don't even try. There will eventually be a merging of the minds of everyone involved in this, and you will be together even while your bodies are expressing in separate locations. This is all we wish to say at this point in time, but we will tell you more when the need to know arises later on. And that comes from an entity called Surveyor, who says, "We are the hosts of heaven." There's a very interesting article there that gives you a glimpse as to what it is like to gradually move through this dimensional vibration into a higher one of the fourth dimension. I hear occasionally about these waves of people that are allegedly going to leave the Earth. I can't discount the possibility, but I don't know too much about that. So I guess that's quite feasible. I believe that where they talk about evacuation, at least I like to think this is the answer, it refers to those times when the changes on the Earth maybe in certain places, or perhaps the whole Earth eventually, will mean that it would be too dangerous for people to remain. So they have made provisions, obviously, to take people off. Now, as I said, I'm not with you next week, and I'll take a quick look at my list here, and I'll tell you who will be with me the week after for interview, and that will be Valerie Donner. If I take a quick look here, I've got about a minute left, I'll tell you what Valerie Donner does. She runs a website called Straight From The Heart, and she channels Myra of the Pleiadian High Council. She also channels Utumi, Dwajkul, Mother Teresa, and Sanat Kumar, and well, maybe others. She's a spiritual healer and counsellor, and also a teacher and a speaker. So I think that should be a very interesting interview. So you may care to note that. So I will say thank you very much for being with me. Hope you enjoyed what I presented for you. And I hope you'll be with me in a fortnight's time. God bless you all. Let's start again.